Okay, well, thank you very much. So I'm Adam Atherley, as Jill said, and when I was looking at this session, I felt like this presentation, you know, it's like those old kids' game of one of these things isn't like the other. And so we have three presentations, which are on sort of affordable, accountable care organizations and health system reform. And then we've got one on public health services, which is a completely different topic, which is okay. Actually, the last time I was here at APHA, I was on a session with a radio talk show host, which was interesting. So this is much better than that. And then the time before, I was in the final session on the final day, and there were two people in the audience. So this is as good as it's ever worked out for me. So my topic is measuring public health services, the impact of a Colorado ruling on minimum core services. And this is, I was trying to think, what's the link between this paper and the other three papers? It's on health reform. This is sort of a state level health reform. And we're not talking about the health system, we're talking about the public health sector. But we're still looking at the implementation of health care reform. So my acknowledgement, this project was funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, who's put a lot of effort and a lot of time into studying public health systems, and we're very grateful for their funding and their support. And then again, the disclaimer, neither I nor my co-authors have any conflict of interest to disclose. So this is my first acknowledgement. And the second thing I want to do is I want to acknowledge we've had a project advisory committee that's been advising us throughout this whole process, and I want to sort of publicly acknowledge them. It's a mix between research people and public health practitioners, but the project advisory committee has been very involved in this project and has been enormously helpful. Okay, so again, I've got the absolute standard background that all of these presentations have, but I'm going to go ahead and put it up there just in case you're in doubt. So we'll have background, research, question, data, results, and conclusions. That's, again, not terribly original. All right, a little bit of background about the question we're trying to ask here and to try to orient you to what we're talking about. In the state of Colorado, they enacted laws to regulate the public health system in 1947. And between 1947 and 2008, there were essentially no regulations. So as we moved into the 21st century, the state of Colorado had an absolute state-of-the-art 20th century set of regulations for their public health system. And so there was a desire to try to update the laws and to sort of acknowledge the reality of the modern healthcare system. So there was a fairly extensive process to redo the public health law, and the result was the Colorado Public Health Act of 2008. And it restructured local government governmental public health systems. It did a lot of other things beyond that. It defined the duties of local public health agencies and local boards of health, which had not been defined legislatively previously. It established a 5-year planning cycle to try to think about how public health ought to be organized and structured. And then lastly, it directed the Colorado Board of Health to do three things. Establish minimum qualification for public health directors, because again, previously there were no regulations about who ought to be a public health director. The second one is define core public health services and quality standards. And that's the focus here of this talk today. In other words, what the Act wanted told the Board of Health to do is essentially figure out what public health agencies ought to be doing, and then go ahead and define those, and then establish a minimum standard so we have some consistency across the state in how public health is delivered. And then finally, once you figure out what the heck it is public health agencies ought to be doing, put together a funding formula to pay for that. So in 2011 then, they went ahead and put in place rules to define this. And what they did in Colorado is they essentially said, all right, here are what we call the 7 core services that must be, now let me back up. So these don't have to be delivered by the local public health agencies, but they either have to be delivered by local public health, or the local public health agency has to assure that they're being delivered in every region. So these are the 7 areas that were defined as sort of the core public health services that all public health agencies in the state should ensure are happening in their community. So administration and government, assessment, planning, and communication, communicable disease prevention, investigation, and control, emergency preparedness and response, environmental health, prevention, population health promotion, and finally, vital records and statistics. And there's a lot of national interest in trying to define what it is that public health agencies ought to be doing across the country. The Institute of Medicine has issued a series of reports, and they've defined the 10 essential public health services. And so the Colorado regulation is consistent with the national guidelines, although it's slightly different. So again, this is an area that there's been a tremendous amount of national interest in, which is why Robert Wood Johnson has been funding research in this area so extensively. Our research question is just, what was the effect of the core services regulation on the adoption slash assurance of core services by local public health agencies? In other words, when you think about where we are in 2008, we're in essentially an environment where local public health agencies can sort of do what they will. And there's very little state regulations that's requiring what activities they do. Then you move into where we are today. We're now in an environment where there's a series of very descriptive rules in terms of what sort of activities public health agencies ought to be doing. And so our question is, did it make any difference? So how did we do this? We did a longitudinal pre-post assessment of core services delivery. There was a pre-survey which was completed by August 2011, which gathered data on what public health agencies were doing prior to the implementation of the new regulations. The intervention is the core services rulemaking, which went into effect in October 2011, and then the post is a follow-up in early 2013. A little bit more detail on that. So the baseline review was done in the spring and summer of 2011. All 54 local public health agencies in the state participated. My co-authors on this, Lisa Van Ramsunk and Sarah Lampe, spent a ton of time actually drove out to every public health agency in the state. And, you know, in Colorado, that involves a lot of driving. And I'll give you some more numbers in a second, but this was a huge endeavor because they had a survey that they had people fill out before. They then drove and met and interviewed face-to-face all of the public health directors and sometimes members of the Board of Health. Again, they spent about 3 or 4 hours in the interview, and then when they got the data back, they looked for gaps, and then if there were gaps, they actually did a follow-up. And then there was a desire to do this follow-up. So at the baseline, they asked 1,750, they collected data on 1,750 different measures. Because what we're trying to do is trying to catalog what the heck is it that public health agencies are actually doing in the state. Because we know they do lots of different kinds of things. So we're trying to put some real data. And again, the broad goal here is to try to put an evidence base behind what public health agencies are doing in the state. And to try to ask the question of what are public health agencies doing, trying to quantify it, and then try to link that to population health. So when we came back to the follow-up, the view was that we could not, the time commitment in terms of collecting the initial data was huge, so we felt like we couldn't ask that same level of detail. So the Project Advisory Committee helped us using a modified Delphi process to try to whittle down from that 1,700 measures down to about 250 measures, and then those were asked in a survey that was sent out this spring. Okay, and in terms of what we were measuring, we were looking at service delivery. So what kind of services were the public health agencies delivering? What kind of capacity did they have? What sort of direct services were being provided? We measured FTE and staffing, and then lots of data in terms of where their funding sources is, where funding dedicated, all those kinds of things. So trying to get, again, a fairly broad picture of what public health agencies were doing. Let's see. So results. So in our data, this is a picture of Colorado, so there's 54 local public health agencies. In the data I'm going to show you, we have data from 51. We now have data on all 54 local public health agencies, so we've got the population. There's 38 single county agencies. There's 4 multi-county agencies, which are the ones in colors there. And there's 58 different satellite offices. So again, we were able to survey all the different public health agencies in the state. Now, I've got kind of an ugly and almost unreadable picture here. So I kind of want to walk you down, because we've got so much data here, it's kind of hard to conceptualize in some ways what we're doing. So what I've got here, the top there is population health promotion. So again, if you remember what I said, is I said, all right, there's seven core services. There's environmental health, there's administration and governance, there's vital statistics. Well, one of them is population health promotion. I'm putting this up here as an example of the way we did the data. And I'm going to talk about population health promotion as we go through here. So under the population health promotion, we were able to identify from the initial data three different core areas that public health agencies were working on: chronic disease prevention, maternal and child health, and then injury prevention. Okay, within chronic disease prevention, there were four distinct sets of activities there: tobacco control, nutrition, physical activity, and mental health. And then within maternal and child health, there's unintended pregnancy prevention and oral health, and then injury prevention, we only found that there was motor vehicles. And then within each, so essentially if you take population health promotion, there's three sub-areas, three broad sub-areas. And then beneath those three sub-areas, there's seven different sort of activity areas. And then within each of the activity areas, there's seven types of things that public health agencies did. Those include the development and dissemination of educational materials, development or dissemination of educational media, development or dissemination of cultural, linguistic tailored materials, culturally or linguistically tailored educational programs, training programs, community development activities, and policy development and implementation activities. So all seven of those are done within all of the subgroups, which means that just within population health promotion, there's actually 49 different activities that we were looking at. So this, I'm going to show you a number of pictures as we go through, and this is the basic framework. So the gold picture are things that were not done either at pre or post. Those were not done before regulations, weren't done afterwards. The red were things that were done before the regulations were put in place, but were not done afterwards. The green were done afterwards, but not before, and the blue were done in both. So, for example, within the chronic disease, as I said, there's four different sub-areas and then seven levels of activities within each of the four sub-areas, so 28 different activities. And of those, about 60% of them were done by public health agencies both before and after. About the next more, and again, I'm sort of looking at the, oh, no, we don't get to do mouse. So that's about, and then about 10% of them were neither done pre nor post. And so the red essentially are things that they used to do but they don't do now, and the green are the things that they do now but they didn't used to do. So as you look at this, what this is sort of saying is that the rules ended up making a fair bit of difference in terms of what sort of activities public health agencies did. And you can see that's particularly true in the injury prevention activities, where you saw essentially about a fifth of all the things that were done in injury prevention were shifted. And then this is sort of breaking down the chronic disease piece of it into the four different activity areas, so tobacco prevention, nutrition, physical activity, and mental health. And again, you can see that this is actually fairly consistent across the four different areas in terms of what they were doing. And again, here's four maternal and child health activities. So you can see, again, lots of activities are changing. This is where it gets sort of hard, because we actually can then drill down within each of these activity levels to specific activities that you're doing within each of these. For example, this is sort of, for chronic disease, this is sort of, again, a rolling up of all the different changes. And what sort of comes, I'm trying to show this picture with pictures, but we can actually show this with statistics, was when you do essentially look at the pre-post changes, most of these changes end up being statistically significant. So what you see essentially is that the big driver is the top one, which is the policy changes. So policy changes in implementation. We see a increase in activities fairly consistently across that. And where you also see it is in the development of cultural programs, culturally and linguistically specific programs. And again, if you look at maternal and child health, this is even more strongly true, where you see a lot more activities in the policy area. And this is for motor vehicle injury. So again, we see the same consistent theme as we go through there. So if you add up across the three different areas, you can see there's a lot of there's a fair number of activities that are consistently across. But again, that was somewhat by design, because when they put the rules in place, the intention was not to blow up the world for the local public health agencies, but to actually write rules that acknowledge a lot of the work that they were already doing. But you can see that when you put in place these sorts of core rules, and again, let me back up and say, why do we care about this? The reason we care about this is because there's a lot of national interest in trying to do these kinds of regulations, of trying to actually put in place these sorts of core service regulations. And what you can see is that essentially it ends up being fairly disruptive for a lot of it, and it does end up being redirecting a lot of the activities. The other thing that we asked about as we worked on this is that there was a question about whether or not the public health agencies were considering becoming accredited, and this is a big interest for a lot of people in terms of accreditation of local public health agencies. And what we find is that the gold is 2010, so pre-rules, and then red is afterwards. And what you saw was that a lot of public health agencies in Colorado in 2010 weren't even considering moving to accreditation, and that's actually moved to a place where lots of public health agencies are either working on the prerequisites for it, or we're moving in that direction. This is a really great one, though, to pause and say that correlation does not equal causation. So there's a lot of other things that are happening in the background here, and I don't think you can necessarily draw the straight line between the changes in the Public Health Act with this sort of push. Okay. Because I got my conclusion, so I'm going to end on time. So essentially what we found as we go through this is that a relatively small number of activities were either added or discarded because of the core services requirements. Because again, that big blue line was the big one. And again, it's kind of interesting, because when you think about the world before 2008, it was essentially, it was to a large extent unregulated. But actually, when you put in then core services regulations, most of what the public health agencies were doing already without the regulations in place were consistent with those rules. So overall, there was a relatively small number of activities added or discarded because of it. But where we saw the big increase was on policy development and implementation initiatives. I mean, that was very consistently across the data. And I've just given you, again, since we only have 15 minutes, a really small taste of the data. But that's where we saw the big increases. And reductions in educational programs and media development. So as we looked at this data, what we really see is that the public health agencies, as a result of these core regulations, started to move away from sort of one-on-one kinds of activities where they were actually delivering programs directly, and they really started moving more towards trying to develop policies and try to do implementation activities to leverage off what other organizations were doing in the community. And there's my contact.